हरि ओ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Bhagavad Sandarbha Adhyayana 3 Adhikarana 1 Eternality of the Lord's Deity Form, Anucheda 27, page 5. Having spoken of the Lord's Sarup of six qualities, Aishwarya, etc., now a new topic begins, in order to explain the perfect nature of the Lord's form. His eternal nature with its qualities has been established by showing his control over Vaikuntha, which has a similar nature. Though Lord appears in the material world, he still remains perfect. That is described in three verses. Udvriti, Srila Prabhupada. At the time of annihilation, the five gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, enter into the mind, intelligence, and false ego, ahankara, and the entire cosmic manifestation enters into the spiritual energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Oh, okay. There we have it. After the two halves of Brahma's life, at the time of cosmic annihilation, when everything manifested is annihilated by the force of time and the elements merge in Prakriti, you alone remain with your unlimited devotees who are non-different from you. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.3, 25. The Lord is therefore known as Sesha Naga, as Adipurusha, and by many other names. Devaki therefore prayed, after many millions of years, when Lord Brahma comes to the end of his life, the annihilation of the cosmic manifestation takes place. At that time, the five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether, enter into the Mahatattva. Right, so here is pointing out, it said in the previous one, that they enter, that the five gross elements enter into the mind, intelligence, and false ego. Right? So, and then in the next verse it says they enter into Mahatattva. So that we can understand what the aspect of the Mahatattva is, because you have goodness, passion, ignorance added to these things. So the 24 elements then are organized according to the three modes of nature, right? The particular combination. Because if you just have the elements themselves and nothing's made from them, that's avyakta, right? Means pradhan is also known as avyakta because nothing's manifest. But pradhan means that the 24 elements are merged into each other homogeneously. So then, in that case, then when we differentiate that from pradhan to avyakta, then that means the 24 elements have been expanded. So now they're separate entities, right? But they're not combined into anything. So then the next stage is the Lord enters those elements themselves, and then they can combine together, right? Because Krishna is who's attractive. Krishna means all attractive. So the reason atoms stick together is because of Krishna's attractiveness. He attracts them, right? You know, people call gravity this, that, so many different things. Does that make sense? Like if, let us say, okay, I'm stirring something. Okay, I'm cooking. I have a frying pan. I'm stirring. Okay. Now, let's say we have a really big frying pan, like a universal size frying pan. And, you know, there's the frying pan, there's the stuff in the frying pan, and there's a big spoon stirring it. But I can't see the hand. I just see this spoon moving. So I we'll give it a special name. No? Does that make sense? The scientists will give it a special name. You know what I'm saying? So that's all that happens in these different things, is they give special names to stuff because they don't see what's happening. Right? So therefore they say gravity. But what it is Krishna's potency, that he's the source of everything. Everything's dependent on him. He enters that, therefore everything can hold together. But they'll call it gravity. Because you want to make sure that it's not personal. Right? Does that make sense? Because then it's because of my mind, I'm understanding it, therefore I'm in control of it. And if I'm in control of it, then there's at least the theory that I can enjoy it. Though we know nerds have a tendency not to enjoy much. You know what I'm saying? Scientists aren't known for, physicists especially, they're not known for enjoying anything. They have their own enjoyment, but it's not socially definable. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then when we deal in these things, then you have to see is that the personal element is there at every step. Krishna glanced. That's why the Mahatattva, the Pradhan went to Avyakta. Because he entered it there, that's why now the Avyakta becomes Mahatattva. Right? So at that time, then everything has to be made. The 8,400,000 species, all the varieties, the 14 planetary systems, you know, mountains and valleys and plains and you know, coastal and, you know, all these different things that are the different situations that people live in. Right? All that has to be created. So in creating that, that means then it has to be by the modes. So now the modes are involved. That's what makes it Mahatattva. Right, and then you have desire, and based on what? On the three kinds of false ego. In other words, we say mind, intelligence, false ego, but it's all false ego. Right? It's just false ego in goodness, false ego in passion, false ego in ignorance. Does that make sense? So then those together, that makes them the creation. Does that make sense? So that's the things you see. One is given in one is given the other. The tendency is to say, oh, this is contradictory. But the point is one's supposed to use the intelligence and go through to see what is being said. What's the common point? So yeah.
The primary creation is existing before the Almighty.
No, the primary creation, that whole thing before Brahma, that's the primary creation. Brahma is the secondary creation. So that means this whole Avyakta and it being known as Sutra, right? Which means the passion element. And then there was also the goodness element.
And
Tamas is the ignorance. Yeah, because everyone's just covered by this ignorance. They don't understand. It means not the ignorance here, it means by Ajnana. They're covered by that ignorance. So they can't tell what it is. It's your phone then. No? It's just the phones doing their own thing. It does stuff. It buzzes. This, you look at it, nothing's going on. So you don't know what's checking. You know, it's funny. It's certain things I mentioned in the class, then later, if you're looking at something on the internet, it comes up.
It's always listening.
Hmm?
It's always listening.
Yeah, so it's really weird. And it's something really obscure, right? You know?
It happens a lot.
Yeah. I mean, so obscure. So the other day in the class, I mentioned that Popeye, you know, it's about Popeye in the Chaturmas. You know, he'll have a problem. You know, the next thing that comes up is Popeye. It's kind of like, you know, you haven't seen Popeye since you're a kid, right? You know, that's what sounds.
The big eyes are watching.
Hmm?
The big eyes are watching.
Yes, yes. Or at least hearing, because they're in the bags, so they can't see a whole lot. So what do you see? I don't know, just saffron.
Big ear, then.
The big ear. Big brother is listening to you, right?
Yes.
Is it Paramatma?
Sorry?
Is it Paramatma? Who has the eyes everywhere?
He has his eyes everywhere, but unfortunately with the phone, I mean, the potency of the phone to keep an eye on you is coming from Paramatma, but it's not that's Paramatma's his personal endeavor. You know, it's just like his energies take care of all that, and then people guide it how they want to use it.
So he's not hosting all that stuff?
No, it's not. It's not. That's strange, isn't it? Yeah, you would think that it would be. Yeah, he's not doing that. Okay, so then it comes into that, and then by those three, then everything goes. So that means everything's going back into these modes, like that, and from that, then it'll go back into avyakta, then from avyakta back into pradhan, and the pradhan back into the Lord. And that all happens just when he breathes in. And then when he breathes out, it goes the other way. Right? And that's two halves of the life of Brahma, right? We've finished one half, 151 trillion years. And that, and so then, you know, there's two of those halves. And all that's happening, the breathing out, means that creation out, Brahma's creation, his life's time, and then the whole thing winding up in 3/4 of a second for Mahavishnu. He just breathes out, breathes in. You know, he's asleep, so it's a pleasant breathe. That's why you get 3/4 of a second. So, whoopee. The Mahatattva again enters by the force of time into the non-manifest total material energy. The total material energy enters into the energetic pradhan, right? So here, the total material energy then means then avyakta, because it means it's the total material energy separated as elements. You can do something with it, but nothing's been done. Mahatattva means everything's been put together. Now it's ready for the living entity to try to control and enjoy it. But it has to be manifest. So it in the universe, so it can do it. So therefore, then in the universe, Brahma's manifest. He goes through his whole thing, makes the whole thing happen. Right? And pradhan enters into you. Therefore, after the annihilation of the whole cosmic manifestation, you alone remain with your transcendental name, form, quality, and paraphernalia. So the point being established is that the Lord has his transcendental qualities eternally. Whether there's a manifestation here or not, that does not affect him. He is always transcendental. So we see his energies expand. And by expanding his energies, that's where everything happens. The transformation, the control of the material energy, all that. My Lord, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, because you are the director of the unmanifest total energy and the ultimate reservoir of the material nature. My Lord, the whole cosmic manifestation is under the influence of time, beginning from the moment up to the duration of the year. All act under your direction. So the moment has that particular thing, the duration of the year, and then it's whose year? You know, it just keeps going up to Brahma, yeah. All act under your direction. You are the original director of everything and the reservoir of all potent energies. Right. So he's directing the unmanifest total energy, because without his direction, it doesn't come together. It doesn't make all the different varieties of the creation like that. It doesn't have all its influences. So everything's there in the primary creation. He's the director of that. Then he directing Brahma. Brahma then manifests it and manages it. So, yeah. The Lord is called the remainder, Sesha Samgyaha. The reason is given. O inaugurator of the material energy, time, which starts with seconds and ends with years, which rotate to make the lifetime of Brahma, by which the universe moves, is said to be your movement. I surrender to the Supreme Lord the abode of peace. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.3.26 Udvriti, Srila Prabhupada. The Lord is addressed here as Avyakta Bandhu, or the inaugurator of the movements of the entire cosmic manifestation. Sometimes the cosmic manifestation is compared to a potter's wheel. When a potter's wheel is spinning, who has set it in motion? That's the point, is pottery is being made, and they're seeing that, and it's all just happening, and they'll say, okay, well, there's some pressure on, you know, there's this lump of clay, and there's some pressure here, and the spinning, so that came from things blowing up and then going out, and I guess when they blow up, they spin, and stuff like that, and then there's certain this pressure by the gravity that forces it out. They go through and make this whole thing, completely ignoring that the potter's part of the wheel spinning, and then with the potter with his hand is making the pot. So that's yeah. It is the potter, of course, although sometimes we can see only the motion of the wheel and cannot see the potter himself. Therefore, the Lord, who is behind the motion of the cosmos, is called Avyakta Bandhu. Everything is within the limits of time, but time moves under the direction of the Lord, who is therefore not within time's limit. Right? He being the source of time, he's not under time. So by time, he controls everything. Because you see, it's time then, because you need time for movement. Movement means time. Right? So therefore, that movement is happening here because of the time factor. But in the spiritual world, then Krishna is the source of that time, and time therefore is just serving him. So here it makes things happen, it makes things go in directions. We lose time. Time has gone by. But for Krishna, that doesn't happen. Time is just there adding a flavor. Because being Krishna, being who he is, he's always present. Because he's eternal. In the past, he was present. In the future, he's present. So there's only present. Right? But there's the flavor of past and flavor of future. Because in rasa, that gives a taste. You were with Krishna, you will be with Krishna. They're two different flavors, and you're with Krishna now. Does that make sense? So it just adds to rasa. It just serves as pastimes. But here, we're controlled by it. So the Lord controls the living entities through time. O instigator of Prakriti by proximity alone, avyakta bandho. Cheshtam means the passing of seconds. Shruti says sarve nimisha jagire vidyuta parushad adhi. All seconds or portions of time are born and shine from the Purusha, Paramatma. Time is the cause of all creation and destruction. Since time is simply the movement of the limbs, there is no creation and destruction of the Lord. And another reason is given. You are the abode of peace, Kshema Dhamma. I surrender to you, Tva. O abode of peace, since Krishna appeared by his own desire, he had no fear of Kamsa for Shurta. This is made clear. No one in the material world, fearful of the snake of time, has become freed from fear, even by fleeing to various planets. O original person, now that you have appeared, death is fleeing in fear of you, and the living entities, having obtained shelter at your lotus feet by your mercy, are fearless and tranquil. Right? Because the Lord is being the source. If you've taken shelter of the Lord, fear goes. All negative things go. Right? So that's the point, is that if you're in connection with the Lord, then everything functions in his, how it works with him. His features, his qualities, his taste. Right? Because it's not it'd be like this. Let us say, let's say we're, in a friend's house. Okay? And he, somehow or another, he's gone to the bathroom or something, whatever it is. We can interact with the stuff of his house, and it will give an experience. But it won't give the same experience when we deal with that when he's present. You understand? It's something different. So the point is that Krishna being all perfect, if you're in contact with him, there is no inebrities. But if you're dealing with something not in connection with Krishna, it will have inebrities. It doesn't mean the mechanics aren't the same, that they don't work, they don't give a particular experience. That's why Nectar of Devotion can describe the science of rasa. And on one level, it makes sense to us as far as how it mechanically works. It's quite complex and everything like that. But we can relate that we've seen those things. This one here, that one there, maybe not all the combinations and things. Right? So that's because we're working with that mechanical element. The point is if it's connected to Krishna, that's rasa. Right? You work with Krishna's energies and the mechanics of his energies without Krishna, that's called material enjoyment. You do the same thing that it's about Krishna, right? That's called ananda. And if it's you're working with the material energy connected to Krishna, but it's not necessarily always about Krishna, that's called sadhana bhakti. Does that make sense? Or, Advaiti sadhana, which means you're dealing with karma yoga.
What's ananda?
Ananda will be when it's in connection with Krishna from Krishna's viewpoint. It means, in other words, when you've crossed beyond the ascending process only into the descending. it's just like karma yoga. How do we define karma yoga?
Actions connected to Krishna.
But what actions?
Prescribed.
Yes, and so and who are they prescribed for?
For conditioned souls.
Yes, for us. So that means we're starting with us, okay?
Oh.
You understand? I'm starting with myself. And myself, then, let's say, you know, we can teach, we can deal with the scriptures and discuss the scriptures. So, therefore, then we'll do that. I mean, we can discuss, connect that to Krishna, right? So that's what we're doing. Does that make sense? And so that means it's connected to Krishna's devotional service. We're getting purified. We're being elevated. But it started with us. So it's going to have, now means the mechanics that we're using, if it's material, it's not connected to Krishna in a direct way. Right? But, and so it's only his potencies that are pervading that makes it attractive and makes it work, and we're attracted to that, but we think we're attracted to the item itself rather than where these potencies are from. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say you have the doll on strings, that's a marionette?
Yes.
Yeah? Like, how would you properly say that? That's the problem, right? You know, you have the dolls that have the strings, and the guy has the thing, and they dance.
In marionette.
Huh?
Marionette.
Yes.
Marionette.
Okay. So the kid will just see the dancing there. He's not looking at the person who's guiding it.
Yes. Yes.
You know. So we're attracted by the what? Marionette.
Marionette.
Because we'll say Marion, marionette. Okay, so that it's always something gets shifted, right? Some vowel, marionette, and so then, but then you say marionette, and then no one else knows you're going. Like it's like you talk. I'll talk about meme, right? Yeah. And people, what's meme? If you have to say mime, then oh, mime. Okay, yeah. Huh?
That's how you pronounce it.
In America, you say mime. Philistines, right? You know. So then, I'm thinking guys with white faces and walls and stuff. You know. Okay. Huh? Yes, okay. So the guy's controlling them. What was it? Marionette, yes. And so then, controlling that, the child is attracted and all that and wants to play with it. So they'll want it themselves because, you know, sometimes they're really small. They'll want to take it. But then it doesn't act. They'll play with it and this and that and so like that. But it doesn't, you know, why doesn't it do anything? Because they've taken it away from. So the attractiveness that we have to something, that's actually Krishna. Krishna's the one that's controlling it. Right? Through his energies. You know, through those three kind, the three modes of nature. And so then, that's what we're attracted to, but we don't know it's Krishna. So the maximum we can get from is happiness. Right, but along with happiness comes distress because things don't work the way we want and all that. And here we call happiness good, distress bad. Now, when we take up sadhana bhakti, then we're going to, through the process of karma yoga, jnana yoga, we're going to connect these things to Krishna. But we're still starting from ourselves. So still there's that mix of the element of that the happiness that's there and the aspect of ananda. Right, so it's giving a taste that's beyond what you're getting anyway, but at the same time as we may be more or less affected by how well it's going, you know, how nicely it's organized and this and that. Does that make sense? So we're looking at the quality of, which is fine if we're thinking of, you know, we want the quality for Krishna, but you know, that means it's getting more advanced. But otherwise, this is what I can do, I want it to go nicely, then I give the results to Krishna, right? So if it's renunciation, it'll be more about ourselves. If it's sannyas, it's more about Krishna, right? But it, you still see is there's an ascending element there, because it's starting from us. The descending means we want to please Krishna, right? And so, therefore, then you will please Krishna according to your position. So it starts with Krishna, then moves to your position, right? Not having a spiritual form, and that, then how do we define our position? By what is our conditioning? You know, what body we have, what mind, what intelligence, you know, what ego, what things we can do, what knowledge, skills we have. Then we engage in those areas. So that's why you see is that these great devotees, they're more humble. Even though they're so good at something, if it's not their area, then they're humble. Because it's not their area, someone else's area. And just like, let's say you're doing, a nice kirtan for a festival or something like that. And, everybody can lead a kirtan. But it may not be a quality that can engage everybody in the room and everything like that. So that's someone else's. So it's not like, yeah, I can lead kirtan too, like this. You don't do that. So that's why you see those such good qualities with the devotees, because they're only engaging in according to their position. So therefore, then they assist by their doing the response in the singing. Does that make sense? Or maybe they can play instrument, or maybe they dance, or something like that. Does that make sense? So the difference is whether it's descending or ascending. So you'll see is that. When we're dealing with the sadhana, then you have the aspect of the it's more towards sakam or more towards nishkam. So sakam will tend to be the renunciation aspect, and nishkam will be the sannyas aspect. Right? Then you're going to have the aspect of, if we get to that, the spontaneous. So then it's more about Krishna. But there'll still be some element of ourselves, but it's much more light. So it's much more on that side. That's why the taste is there and attachment is there. Right? But it's not until one's freed from these considerations that then it's called bhava. Then it's called ecstasy. But we see the principle is there, it moves forward in the same way. Does that make sense? So depending on what it is, we can see where it places. And when we say mixed, it's mixed. So some aspects it'll be more mixed this way, more that way. So in one aspect it's more towards Krishna, another aspect it may not be. Does that make sense? It's just like sadhana, then they're doing really well and all that, and very much about Krishna, and then something else, then it's more about themselves. So it's just depends upon what's there, Like the dog is really nice and friendly, and you pet him and all that, put some food in front of him, he's even more friendly, but you try to touch his food, he'll bite your arm off. So what happened to the friendly, So it's just that you have all these different aspects. So on the spiritual platform, things are consistent. In the material world, you don't know how it'll go. Because here, inconsistencies causes distress. On the spiritual world, what the so-called inconsistencies are just different flavors of bhava. Yes?
It sounds like Vaidhi would be ascending within descending, and then raga is descending within descending. Is that right?
No, I put it the other way. I mean, depends upon if it's still within sadhana. Right? In other words, within sadhana, vaidhi, you would say that it would be descending within ascending. Rag would be then ascending within descending. And then when you're on the bhava and that, then that would just be descending. And the karmis, it's just ascending. So you see is that it's in between, but each one gets higher than the other. Because rag means it's about Krishna. It's just that natural spontaneity towards Krishna. Then there may be considerations afterwards. Well, the other one is considered yourself, and then doing that, then it creates that attraction to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because it's still a bit about the self and all that. So that's why the madhyam is in a distinct category. It's more advanced than the neophyte, which is more about themselves, but it's still not on that platform of that spontaneity you find in the spiritual world, in bhava. Right? Because there is still the consideration. So for them, the consideration themselves is just, this is what they can do, and they can, because they're comfortable, because it works nicely. So there's still that element of, you like to work in the area that's comfortable. So even though it's just about Krishna, so that's what we're saying, it's sannyas, but it still has that aspect that it's you're comfortable in the area. In general, we'll say sannyas, that's the good thing that you're doing. It's all about that. Because you could say, from that point all the way through to prema, they're using that principle. But when you're talking about the adhikaris, then you want to distinguish, then you can see is that they're still comfortable in that. There's certain areas and this and that. They're more. It's about them being comfortable in there. Though, it's all about Krishna. But you still have that little touch, right? Because just like bhava is in ecstasy, you're their spiritual body, you're there in the holy dham, you're associating with the associates of the Lord. But there's still that point, it hasn't come to prema. Because it hasn't become exclusive yet. So if it's not exclusive, means there's some distraction. Does that make sense? So prema means now that's perfect. That's why then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when he's defining, he'll say, bhakti means prema bhakti. Below that, then you're practicing. Right? So that's just to put it in the perspective that you understand where you're getting to. Otherwise, you make a little advancement, you might sit back and be comfortable. You know, just like, let's say those in the mode of goodness get conditioned by goodness and they're not endeavoring for spiritual life. People that are in a family, they're following all the rules and regulations that are given in the Shastra and everything like this. Their life is going fairly smoothly. They may not be focusing on spiritual life. Because they get conditioned by goodness. But if anything comes up and they take up spiritual life, they'll be quite good at it because that means that for them, that functioning of goodness in sadhana, it works very nicely for them. Does that make sense? But if not, they may not. But you see, those who are distressed, they tend to look for an alternative. Of course, if their alternative is another mundane, form of sense gratification, they'll take that first. When none of that works, then they might contemplate, well, maybe there's a spiritual alternative. Does that make sense? So that's the point is you can get conditioned by goodness. So that even in that point of bhava, you can just like it there and not necessarily take it seriously. That's why the example is given of when the first night of the rasa dance, some gopis could not go. Some, Krishna plays flute, they just went. Others tried to go, got stopped, and then went. Others tried to go, were stopped, did not go. Right? Why? Because when Krishna plays the flute, they're remembering Krishna. But before that, they were distracted by household duties, this, that. So Krishna's not exclusive. Right? So then, by not going, that separation in not going, then they burnt up all their pious and impious activities. That then brought them to the point where it could be exclusive. Then the next, arrangement, that then they went. Does that make sense? So you're dealing with these subtleties here that in the general term, you don't need to worry about that. But if you want to be exact, then it has to be understood how it works, the hierarchy. Otherwise, then one may mistake one's position for something higher than it is, or someone else's position for lower than what it is. So you have to know exactly where. Because if you know where you are, then that's how you can move forward. If you don't know where you are, just like I say, go to Calcutta and you don't know where you are, how do you get to Calcutta? You know? Does that make sense? You know, you're taking a shower. And as go to Calcutta and yeah, okay, I'll just catch the bus here, But where? There's no bus in the bathroom. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, you might have a port key there, but you don't have a bus. Right? But who keeps a port key in the bathroom, right? Does that make sense? Unless you have relatives you don't want to meet. Then it's a great place to keep it. Yes.
How to know where we are.
But by analyzing these things. Like that, as you see, is how much we have, just means that just the definitions of Shraddha to Prema. We see these things, and then we look at it and then analyze. We just see, how much is there and how much not. So that sense. It's not a rocket science. It just takes that we analyze it. And by Krishna's grace, then we can understand. But it's something we have to think about. So the directions are given. We apply it. Is that good? Does that make sense?
You just have to process the information.
Ah, okay.
Because we always work in the realm of descending, and then within descending, then we categorize. But now,
yes.
it's within ascending, there's descending, like that.
So yeah, it's just a fine point in. It's just a fine point within. Means if one has faith, one's working, you could say, technically within the descending process. But it's just a matter, it's just like, as Vaishnavs, we're within the Nivriti, not Pravriti mark.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean that within Nivriti we don't have Grihastas.
Yes.
We don't have our own particular desires, you know? You know, like how you say, the Brahmachari is in the closet gloating over his bucket of halava that he snitched that everybody else is trying to figure out where it is. So there may be an element of pravriti there, you know.
Just
small. Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that when we're dealing, is that you have the bigger picture, you have the karmis and you have the devotees, or karmis, jnanis, and devotees. You know, and so then you see what's there and everything. But within the devotees, you have all the elements of karma, karma yoga, jnana yoga, and jnana yoga. Because in the first six chapters, that's what's being discussed. You know, is that how the elements of the material world have their natural position, you know, in bhakti. And if you don't have that natural position of bhakti, how those positions, by conditioning, they'll also still get you out. That's the fun part, is you're following something with detachment, right? It's nivriti, nishkam karma. It will liberate you, right? Just the byproduct of that is liberation, right? Sakam is that the byproduct is you get material facility. But nishkam means the byproduct is you get liberation. But it's doing it to please Krishna. That's the part that will give you bhakti. Right? It's not that the nishkam or the sakam is what's giving bhakti. It's doing it in connection with Krishna. So the nishkam karma, it's the yoga, that connection with Krishna, that actually makes it. So that's why then we're careful on when you say... you know, there's the difference in karma yoga can mean just the karmis, you know, but following shastra and all that, and because of their duties and all those things. Or it can mean, you know, when they try to connect it up with something, liberation and all these kinds of things. So they'll talk about nishkam karma yoga. They talk about it more than we do, because that's kind of all they got. But the term is a standard term in the spiritual circles. But we haven't made it, you know, as prominent as it was back in the mid-90s, right? You know, that was somehow another, that was the era of nishkam karma yoga. So, now I'm just thinking that'll come up, songs from the 90s, right? So, but for us, we're looking more at it's about the yoga. It's not the nsakam or nishkam. It's about the yoga and how the sakam connects to yoga and how the nishkam connects to yoga. Because the point is engaging the senses or detaching the senses, that's not the bhakti. It's connecting to Krishna. It's mechanics. You know what I'm saying? The kriya and jnana shaktis means it's mechanics. And just because we're dealing with the mechanics, without Krishna, without his icha, doesn't make it spiritual. It's when you connect it to Krishna, that's when it's spiritual. So that's why, if we're not thinking of Krishna in the process, then renunciation comes into play. I may be doing it for myself. So it's karma yoga, because I'm doing karma, but it's only at the point of renunciation that it technically becomes yoga. But because that's what it's for, the whole thing will be called karma yoga. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But you also have sannyas, means you understand this karma yoga throughout, or at least a prominence, right? You know, it's prema means it's consistent, you know, totally. But before that, it's prominent, so you call it by that. Does that make sense? You know, like that. You call that, say that's a red blanket. If I say give the red blanket, not the brown blanket or the gray blanket. Right? But it's not red. just red. It's got other things in it. So that's the whole point. When the prominence is sannyas, then we can call it nishkam karma yoga. But actually, prema bhakti, that's actual nishkam karma yoga. It means there's no desire for it. It's only Krishna's pleasure. But on that level, we don't call it nishkam karma yoga because it's not an element of trying to get beyond karma. We call it prema. Does that make sense? So these terminologies are there for the purpose of elevating our elevation and our understanding. And so depending on the context, we get finer and finer understandings of these things. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just like that in anything that you learn. You learn the main stuff and then you go. The difference is in the descending process, you start from the principle. And the other, you start from the simplest kind of common detail. You know, like that. So that's the, it's just like, but otherwise, the principle is, okay, you know, we're trying to ride a bike, you know, so then you look at, you know, how sitting on the bike and not, you know, and not falling off or something like this, you know, it's just like this. But actually, the principle is that you can stay balanced on the bike and not hit anything. You know, does that make sense? If you're balanced and you don't hit anything, then you're good. You know, so that's the whole. So if that's your understanding, then you'll be aware of these things. Otherwise, then you're just sitting on the bike, but you're not aware of what's around, so you hit things. Does that make sense? So that's the difference you generally see in the ascending process and the descending in knowledge. The descending will talk about the principle. So Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana is first introduced in the descending process. On the ascending process, then you're going to start with, you know, like ABC or 1, 2, 3, 4, or, you know, something like that. Some very common thing that is very, it's a generic detail, but it's not a principle. Does that make sense? Numbers are used to express math, but it's not that the numbers are math. So in the descending, you're going to start with the concept of math, not with numbers. Once that's understood, then you can... You know, it's just like with a little kid, I take some 5 rocks, you know, so they can count. So then I'll say, okay, here's 2 rocks, here's 3 rocks. You know, okay, how many here? 2. How many here? 1, 2, 3. Now, if I put them together, how many rocks do I have? Right? Then you're showing them how addition is working. Once they catch that concept, then you can show them how to write it down. You know, and then the addition tables, subtraction table, all these different things. But the principle is there. So that's the problem, is this principle is not taught. So that's why catching math, unless you really like it or something, have a nature for it, it's more difficult. Because they're using this ascending process. Does that make sense? So we're so used to the ascending, we don't necessarily make a distinction. In the beginning, yes, it's all about Krishna. But once we start to adjust to it, then we start to relax and all that, and you know, behave in a more kind of balanced way. But the problem is if we're not careful, it'll go out of balance the other way. You know, so just descending but not really understanding it, but we're functioning in there, to bringing to a more balanced, it will go out into the ascending again, because that's just, you know, what our conditioning is. So we don't see, we won't catch this where it switches. You know? Because if we say, on this consideration, is it because Prabhupada and the Acharyas say, and that? And so, therefore, okay, and so that's what we have to do, that's what we have to understand, what is that, what's the principle behind it, you know, how does it apply, how would we apply it as devotees? And then that being in place, then you're going to look at, okay, now, how do we, by that, then that's how we're going to explain it to others. Like, if I understand the principle and how it applies in the life and the value of it, right? So I can appreciate at least theoretically the nididhyasana aspect, even though I've cleared doubts. Then that part I could explain to others. But if not, it's just that here's the rule, this is what you have to do. It's pious to follow like that, and it's connected to Krishna, so it gets that devotional result. But we see is that because of the element of sakam, then when a doubt comes up, then what's the doubt? About the scriptures, about the authority, does it apply now? Anything that devotees don't like, that they see the karmis are doing, they'll say, oh, it doesn't apply now. Even though there's probably literally billions of people on the planet following that cultural aspect. And their circle of modern, educated, liberal people is not that many. They're in the minority. Right? But they'll say it can't be done now. Simply because they and their friends don't value that. So what are you doing? Now you're dealing with ascending. But because it's so gradual, they didn't even notice it. Right? So they'll say, oh, we can't do that because nobody will accept that. Who's this nobody?
He's nobody.
Yeah. So the point is, if he's a nobody, why do we care? We don't care about nobody. He's a nobody. So therefore, so that's the difficulty, is that it suddenly now is it's the vox populi that's the measurement, rather than Krishna and his culture. Then how to explain that to others? It's just that no, they won't accept it, so we can't do that, so it's rejected. So you don't even have discussion and all that. So it just means that we haven't got past Shravana. You know what I'm saying? In that particular area. Other places, yes, we may have great value. We've got the needed yasa, but that area, then on the social, we haven't gotten past Shravana. In fact, we're not even willing to listen. So we can't give that. You can't clear doubts, because until you clear doubts, you can't have proper apprehension. So the intelligence won't come to the proper understanding. Because with doubt, then we're going to have misapprehension. Throw on top of that, no one gets enough sleep, and so they don't have any memory, and yeah. Yes?
The difficulty seems to be is that to install principles, it takes literally years.
Yes, it does.
And it sounds boring.
No, but that's only because of later. Someone who's new, these are not boring. Because it's new, it's fresh. So if you just give them all the principles and from that show them the detail, they get used to that, and that's how they function.
While discussing details, it's always interesting and it's fun. It's something.
Yeah. No, but that's for us because we're acclimatized. But someone who's brand new to Krishna consciousness, anything is that they don't know the difference between a principle. So if you just deal with the principles and show all details and connection with there, they're fine with it. So that's the thing, is that if you've been educated in this concept, this is how you've been dealt with in those first few years, then you can continue that and it's not boring anymore. So then you can also see new details in the context of the principles. And principles are valued to you, and so then you take that as that's what's interesting. Does that make sense?
Because this we can study only from Srila Prabhupada's books, but when academics, they are the main educators in our society, they approach it opposite. So it's like,
and so you'll never get it. Means if you're sincere, Krishna will reveal, of course. But it doesn't it, and because you've understood it yourself as an individual, that way then the teacher may get some credit for. Some spiritual benefit for having taken part in a process that did cause you to, like this, inspired you to, but they don't directly get the credit. And so then the problem is they're confused and they'll create confusion. So that's why it has to be seen is that we have to stick to what Prabhupada says. So even if it means we have to, if we don't understand it, try to understand it, approach those who do, rather than, oh, I'm intelligent, and I don't understand it, so it can't be right. Like I mentioned that one time, anything that I've, all the cultural things Prabhupada's mentioned in the books, we've experienced them, what he talks about in India. I've experienced all of it, except for the one where his mother, going to the next door, got in the palanquin or the carriage, and she went out and then went back in. That's the only one I haven't seen. Everything else I've seen, whatever Prabhupada talks about. I brought this up in an assembly of senior Indian devotees from Indian backgrounds. You know, Indian, born in India. And they were saying that all this stuff, that's before, you know, the grandparents, before that was there. And I was saying, no, it goes on now. Because they, being enamored by the modern stuff, didn't see it. Because I came to India, you know, just, you know, you join and then after some time you come to India. So then you see these things as you're new. So India for me was during those first few years. So you see all that. Prabhupada's talking about it, there it is. But for them, there it, of course it's there. Then it's all about, well, you know, what about this, you know? Yeah, my mom's cooking great, then there's Domino's. It's like, you know, it's like...
Their grandparents are living in villages. And their parents are living in cities.
Yes.
So cities, they don't follow.
No, but you can still see it. Like in Calcutta, you could still see all these things. At the same time, we went to villages, you see there. It's in a simpler way. But it's just a matter of where you see it. You have to, you know. In other words, let's say you have like in Calcutta, the shop that sells iPhones. Is it everywhere? No. There's a place on, you know, there's a place on Park Street. It's probably another place somewhere else. But if you know it, you can see it.
There's not a place.
Huh?
Only one, I think.
Okay, so it's only that one. That's the only one I know. But
there's one, I think, in a Swiss hotel.
Swiss hotel, okay. Better. So, like that. But you see it. But others that don't know, they won't see it. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that they get enamored by the modern thing and all that. You know, it's like, you know, eating a burger, whatever they call it. You know,
Subway.
Yeah, Subway. Yeah, it's like, what's a Subway? You know, that's a company. You know,
no,
I'm
bread.
Eating Subway. Pick up the building, crunch.
It's bread with subject.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so that's the thing, is they get enamored by this and they don't see these subtler things. You know, they don't notice how they're serving prasad, what goes with what, according to the seasons, what they're cooking. You know what I'm saying? Because they're not paying attention. But if you heard about it, it's new, then you're going to pay attention. So it'll be nice for you. But the point is, there's in the cities, it'll be harder to see. The villages, you learn it, but you maybe don't see it either. It's there, and you do like that, but you don't know why, because who's telling you? It's just that if you ask the Indians why you're doing this, oh, because that's what our parents, grandparents, that's what we've done. This is our tradition. But why? They don't know. So that's why the young people don't follow. If they could explain it, then, because there was a point in the past, they could explain it. And they go, oh. And so, therefore, that's why they do. So this whole thing is, oh, it doesn't work. No, it's just not explained. As soon as you explain it, it works. Does that make sense? Like if there's nobody who knows how to ride a bicycle, that doesn't mean bicycles are archaic and don't work anymore. It just needs a person who knows how to ride it. Yes?
Well, this aspect that when we learn a principle and there are wide variety of ways how you apply it.
Yes, yes.
And then a person to apply it, he requires some specific qualities and skills to do it.
Yes.
That's like in spiritual aspect, we can give the essence of all the principles at once and like it builds very, the concept itself or the principle itself, they build up very nicely.
Mm.
Same to do with like subjects like math. The concept build up also more or less.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But when we go for details, how to apply it, sometimes we see like if the boys are having that focus and all, they can apply very well. But if they don't have, they cannot apply it that well.
Mm-hmm.
But if as a teacher I understood that they understood the principle,
mm-hmm,
and move on to the next principle,
right,
and then come back again, because then once with the principles, the next principle is understood, the maturity increases, because of which if I see it that they can apply the details, because then the qualities and then skill is...
It'll move forward that way. You're going, the principles, it's just like when you're, let's say you're going upstairs. What's the first thing required to go up the up to the next step? That's there, but that's a mechanical thing. But what's the first thing? Can you, without seeing the step, move on to the step? No, you see the step. Seeing the step, now you follow the mechanics of walking. So that's the point, is that, and if you see as they don't get the detail, means they're not connecting it to the principle. So then you have to go back, show the principle, how it's working, how it comes down. Because the more detail, the farther it is away. So then you have to show the connection all the way down. So that means if they don't see it, means the connection is broken somewhere. So you start there and take it back down again. Means it takes more explanation, but once you get it through, then they're more solid. And then that builds on, and then it becomes, like you were saying, then it builds very nicely.
Because I was told that in the academic scenario, it works like unless you perfect or you attain a level of perfection on applying the first principle, then better not to go to the next one.
No, that's another thing. That's just amazing seeing that you're doing that there, because that's also a traditional way of doing it. And then they're very good. Like, I remember they were joking about Asad Ali. He's a Rudraveena player. And so he was, for quite some time, he was the, you know, head of music in Delhi University. You know, at least the classical music. And so his style of teaching, he even calls it himself, is one drop at a time. And so he'll give it by drop, and you'll perfect the drop, move on to the next drop. Like that. And so then you know, I met one student from there who was, you know, one of his students like that. You know, he must have been, you know, quite good at playing like that. And he was kind of like goofing on it, that he says, you know, the first level, he was talking about this one drop at a time thing. It says, you know, you have okay, we're going to play sitar. Okay, you bring the sitar. They put down the case. Okay, says, okay, now open the case. You start to open the case. No, not like that. Like this. Like that. So they would goof. Is that, you know, it's every, and it was. It was exactly. Because his father was a court musician for I think one of the kings. You know, one of the, you know, like Jodhpur or someplace like this. And so everything is just perfect because you're doing for the king. You know, it's a presentation. It's not that you just get out and, you know, like this and play. You know, it has to, everything's dignified, how you pick it up. So that's the thing, is I only learned from him basically how to tune the instrument and how to hold the instrument. That's all the farther I got in, you know, being there for 10 days, like that. But when I would go to someone else to you know, learn something, you know, they say, okay, well, you know, you start. I would go tune the thing, pick it up like that. They would think I was quite advanced in, because by the other method, moving forward, like that, because a lot of teachers do that, then To be at that level, you had to be so advanced. But no, it's just I knew that so well. Like, you know, how I can do, how you turn the, you know, everything that you do. It is a good method, because then they're solid, because then you'll see as it's really slow in the beginning, then it picks up. But sometimes you see as if the kids are getting, you know, they get somehow another bored or that, you can move it forward because of that, but then you still want to bring it back. So it's not that it's one or the other. It would generally be as you go through like that, but if like that, you can't. So many music teachers, you get kind of okay at it, they'll give you the next lesson because you keep inspired. You don't really get that good. You move forward. So it's not one for excellence. So only someone who's a really good student will somehow or another pull it all together and become good. And by the other method, then it's obvious the good students will move forward and the other ones will do okay. You know, so it'll be solid. So you can use it when you want to, when you see as it's like that, you throw in something new. But then you have to connect it back to what's there and then go back to that and then throw, you know. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, if it's always something new, then they also won't do it. It's like we saw with the boys. That we put in that pizza oven, and they were doing some other things, and so every week then you know they would do something far out. But then what happened is after you know, like some months, it was noticed that they didn't care anymore. So they were taking it for granted. They would just leave things around. They'd waste stuff, this, that. So then they cut it down to, you know, like once a month, and now it's special. And they, you know what I'm saying? So the point is the main is that you're going through step by step. And now and again, you can throw in something else. But if you only use the something else, then they also don't take the subject very seriously. Does that make sense? So one is they get they're bored. The other is that they don't take it seriously, and technically they're bored. It's just something new, so it kind of goes through. So they'll do, you know, a few percentage. Well, the other one, if it's the main, and then you add that in, then they'll do, you know, you might get 20% or 30% out of it. But if that's the only system you use, you only get a few percent out of it. Does that make sense? Because you're dealing with the mentality. So the techniques have their purpose, but then you want to see that they're working through nicely. And depending upon if it's a matter of you find, okay, then it's if I don't move through, kids get bored. Right? So then the whole point is then what do you do? The one who's saying that, no, do it like this, and if they find their kids aren't getting bored, ask them, how are they kids not getting bored? Like that. Because you know the benefit of using what you're doing, but at the same time as the other, then how solid it is. Does that make sense?
Yes. That aspect makes sense, but there's another detail to it that when you move to the next principle of something, sometimes if they cannot catch the first principle by moving to next principle, sometimes also advantages they can catch back this.
Yes, but that's when you use it, when that's the case. If it's just being bored, you don't want to use it as a jump. No, no, hey, don't bother the bird. Don't bother. Which is it? Is it? These ones don't bother. These guys are cool. Pigeons, you can bother them all you like. Does that make sense? So, because if you find it with a particular kid, that's what it is, that's what you use. But with those who can go through, then that's what you use for them. But the point is you have to get it there, because if it's not working the one way, you can't touch this way, you know, you touch like this. But you get it done. But then you'll find in another aspect, then it has to be run in the regular way. So it's very individual. That's the advantage of the tutorial teaching. Is that you can see? Yes?
Basically, we're just saying what, say, individual, is we adjusting in our preaching work to where people are at.
Yes, yes.
In countries and charities.
Yes, yes.
And realizing or striving to realize the essence.
Yes.
That's what we're saying. And
yes.
The principles.
Right.
How much can we do faithful innovations in our preaching work, like Bhaktisiddhanta starting Sannyasa Ashram and Gaudiya Vaishnava didn't exist before?
No, it always existed. Or it just wasn't used for. Means. The Tridandi Sannyasi is the Vaishnav tradition. It's just that the Vaishnavs up to that point were just being Babaji's and staying out of the way because they didn't want to get involved in the social scene that was going on. So with him, he you could say, reintroduced the Vaishnav Tridandi Sannyas, which is there. The Shris were doing Madhvas like this. It was a standard thing. It's just that he saw that unless we go out, people aren't going to catch. Like Lord Chaitanya, he took sannyas because people weren't dealing properly. So then to make them. So the innovative is you're dealing with the principles that still applies in the culture. But to be innovative, if you have to break down the principles of the Vedic, that's not innovation. That's just attachment. You know? It's just like, let us say, okay, at the university, they're studying some comparative religion and all that, and they just somehow or another happens to be that the Dalai Lama happens to be in town, and the teacher, taking advantage, went and spoke. He had some time. He can come down and spend an hour, you know, at the lecture. Okay? So now you tell the students, yeah, tomorrow the Dalai Lama will be coming and all that. You know, we're discussing Buddhism or, well, you know, we were going to, but he's coming here, so we're going to get into that right now. We'll put this on the side and we're going to, you know, look at that, focus on that for a bit and all in like that. Okay? The students are happy. Now, if he shows up the next day in flip-flops, cargo shorts and a t-shirt, are you going to be impressed or maybe a little disappointed? You want him to show up in his full regalia. You know, you don't expect him with those big fancy hats and the horns and all. That would be great. But, you know, or at least all his guys show up in that. So when he comes in, they blow the horns and he walks down. You know, it'd be impressive. It'd be good. So the culture is there. So this idea is, no, we can't use the color. People will be like this and that. It's like, well, anything other than a suit, you're going to put off most people anyway. Because depending on how you dress, only your particular clique wears that. And everybody else doesn't. So the only common point is a suit. That's the one thing everybody relates. That's formal. That's proper. You know, even a hillbilly, if you're wearing a suit, okay, that's what you do when you go to a wedding or go to the church or something, you know, like that. So they can relate to it. So that's the whole thing, and we see it. And why? Because it's a gentleman. So the Vedic principle of dress is being a gentleman. So therefore, that's why we wear what we wear. This is how gentlemen dress. And so then, if you're working in another culture, then how does a gentleman dress? That has to be the common point. Not, oh, we're trying to reach the masses, so then, you know. No, that doesn't work. So you have to be, you know, comfortable yourself with who you are. And you have to then fit in like that. That's, that you can say, if you're using that kind of technique, that's innovation. But just that, oh, we can't preach like that, we can't do that, that's not innovation. That's just attachment. Does that make sense? You know, because like, so we have to be very, very careful, is that we are using, but we're using it in that context. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, give an example. We had one devotee, head pujari in Vrindavan for a long time, Omkar. He's like the famous pujari, like that, you know. So then, you know, he was French, and he was from, you know, French like aristocracy kind of thing, you know, high class kind of jazz. And so then he, you know, so then the cooking, the culture, the everything, he knew all that kind of stuff. So then he got into cooking, because being the head pujari, then you'd see a lot that there are no pujaris to cook for the deities, especially in the summer or the winter. They'd all disappear. It's too hot or too cold. So then he would cook himself. And because, you know, he's one from background, Aristotle means tradition, you know. And so then, you know, what's our tradition? So he'd spend a lot of time in Mayapur. He would learn the cooking and all that from, you know, the Bengali ladies here and that. So remember, see, when he'd cook, you'd look at it, you would think it's French. How he cut things, how like, but if you tasted it, it was 100% Bengali. So the techniques and everything, just some of the presentation, he knew that. So he used that, but it tasted totally Bengali. It wasn't like a fusion thing or this or that. It was exactly Bengali. Just the beans, instead of cutting a little shorter, he would cut them, you know, with the angles like this, you know, the French would cut like that, you know, Bengalis would just cut it straight, you know, little things like that. And so, you know, how he'd arrange it on the plate, how he'd plate it, you know, it'd be more French, but the taste would be Bengali. So that's the thing, is you can use whatever will work, but the point is it doesn't mean we don't follow the tradition. So this idea is, oh, we can't do that, it's archaic, there's no such thing. It's still going on today. Like that, you know. So that's the whole thing, is that as preachers, then this is what we do. We have that advantage. We can walk in bed sheets, and it's cool because we're preachers, you know. Like that, it's fine. It's not that it's a problem, you know. You know, it's just like, let's say if somebody's into martial arts, he'll be wearing the shoes, he'll be wearing the pants with the articulated knee. You know, he'll be considering all these things. It basically looks kind of like everybody else. It is pants and shoes and this, but you'll also see, you can kind of tell they're into martial arts. So, and no one will say, oh, you can't do that, it's archaic, you know, that's, you know, Chinese people. You can't say that. So why can't we do what we do? Does that make sense? So, you know, it's you find what works. You find as close as possible. You know, if they can handle the kurta, but not the dhoti, wear the kurta and wear pants. You know? You know what I'm saying? Something like that. But they tend to, you know, if you wear yogi pants, they can relate to that.
Tight pants?
Huh?
Long pants? Tight pants?
Yeah, you can also do those ones, you know.
It depends really to who one's preaching, right? Because some people that will value individuality of tradition.
Yeah.
They're open-minded. They won't judge you for wearing
Yes, and also generally, if they're intelligent, they're cultured, they're eclectic, and all that. So they're the ones that'll take it seriously. So why would we drop our culture from people who are xenophobic? You know what I'm saying? Why do we get, since there's so many people that you could preach to that aren't xenophobic, then that's where you go. But to say that, no, we have to drop all our tradition because of these xenophobes, it's like, it means even in their own culture, no one likes xenophobes. You know? So why would we make adjustments for them? Like that. you know, if you're at a thing, you know, you have to go to work, and they don't want you to wear the dhoti and stuff like that. You have to wear whatever's the, you know, the set kind of office kind of, you know, attire, you know, so you have a job, you do that because you get your money. And then when you go home, you wear what you want and you use the money how you want. So there are situations you have to adjust. But you have to see is that it doesn't change our culture, our values, and it doesn't change our, you know, our being comfortable with ourselves. You know, in other words, wearing karmic clothes is because not because you're comfortable in it, only if the karmis are comfortable in it. But as you pointed out, is for most karmis, cultural things they expect you. Like, let's say the you know, whatever it is, the what's it? You know, the how you say the Edinburgh marching band is coming. You know, and they're going to do a program. You expect them to be in kilts. If they show up in jeans, you know, it's like, why did I pay this much money? You know? So that's the whole thing, you know? Does that make sense? So it's like that, you know? You go to see Swan Lake and they show up in sweatpants. You know, it's like, you know, what's going on? You know, so that's the way it goes. You expect it to be, the culture you expect to be there. So if you're dealing with religious things and all that, it's fine. They do. You can always tell, like a priest, you can always tell it's a priest, even if it's just that little collar. Still, you can tell. You know? So it's not a problem. You know? You know, if you're preaching down in the ghetto and this and that, then yeah, you might have a few tattoos and you might work out at the gym, you know, fine, cool, but you know, but how many are doing ghetto preaching? You know, that's the whole point. Is that I saw some devotees, they lived down there, they were preaching there, and they do very well, and they were very humble and this and that. And when you have a program where devotees come over and that, you know, it'd be all that would be how they dress. And when they go out on the street, they might wear something else. They didn't have any problem with it. It was just that's how, and even then, it's just, you know, they know that ghetto guys know these are the guys in bed sheets. You know, they're nice guys. They don't, you know, it's like, you know. You were saying when devotee was telling me, and they were in, I think they were preaching in, I don't remember if it was Napoli or in Sicily, someplace where you have a very strong, presence of those who are what do you call it? Their nefarious activities, you could say, are administratively organized, right? Okay. Yeah. And because of that, they're doing quite well. You know, they wear suits, they have nice cars, you know, everything like that. You know, they look good. They take care of their mothers. They have really far out hats. You know, like that. And so so then the devotee there would do a lot of prasad distribution, real lot of prasad distribution. And, you know, kind of helping and that, because it was, you know, because if you're in these places, it means even though it may be a city, the neighborhood is more like it's a village. Everybody knows each other, you help. And so he was really getting in there, preaching and doing and this and that. So one day, you know, and he was, you know, it was tough. You don't get a lot of money and all that, but people would give him that. He would say when he was distributing books, you go door to door. They'd go door to door, and you dress as a devotee, and you would ring the doorbell. No one opens the door. On the second floor, they come to the balcony. What do you want? And then you say about the books and this and that. They lower down a basket on a rope. You put the book in there, they look it up, they look at it, they like it, they keep the book and put some money in it. If they don't, you get the book back. You know? So that kind of like this. So, you know, it's a little tight. And then one day, you know, this, you know, black car shows up. You know, the two guys get out of the car, you know, standing there. You know, this big dude gets up, walks out, you know, they think, uh-oh, what's happening here? Guy comes in, like that, puts this big wad of money into the donation box, and then leaves. You know, because they're doing good work. And if anybody comes and bothers them, they'll take care of it. You know, someone comes and steals something, like that, they know who the thieves are. They'll get it, and it'll end up back on your porch. So that's the thing, is people appreciate you're just doing what you do, and with time it works. So we just have to have that faith and be comfortable. And then others will be comfortable. If we're not comfortable with ourselves, no one will be. It doesn't matter what we're wearing, no one will still like us. But if you're comfortable, it doesn't matter what you wear. Does that make sense? So innovation, it means we're still being ourselves, and we're just seeing how a detail can apply into these people's lives, but you don't change any principle. You know, that's we should stop.
Okay.
Otherwise, we could keep going, but... Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premnandi.